Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Why were you obsessed with the number four?
It's my favourite number. Still is. Still my favourite number. Forget anything that's number four. I'm like, fuck yeah.
What is it about number four?
I don't know. Just as a kid, I just gravitated towards the number four so much that when I was four, I didn't want to turn five and refused to acknowledge the number five. So I'd go 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
So was it a love of number four or a hate of number five in the end?
Both. Mm. One became the other. But then when I turned five, I was like, oh, I'm five, sound.
That is a lovely story for the audio podcast listeners to hear at the beginning of the show before we turn the camera on. I'm leaving that in. That's the intro. All right, now we can start.
The boyhood dream has come true. All of you, spoke to me.
You're about to find out how ugly mankind can really be.
Myself and the clique are going to dance all over your face.
Talk about your Psalms. Talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says I just whipped your ass.
Welcome, everyone, to the Guldtallet Classic Raw Review. Ow! This is where, as the other Cultaholic lads look straight ahead towards a WrestleMania backlash, we, via our Ica Pro powered DeLorean, are getting the backwash from 1995 in the shape of 1996. And who be we? I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, Tom Campbell. I'm with the mulligan to my O'Hare, Jack Atkins from Cultaholic.com. Jack Atkins, hello.
Hello, Tom.
How you doing?
Is your throat all right? That sounds a bit phlegmy.
That was quite phlegmy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I was ever so phlegmy.
You're one of the great Flemish painters.
Hey, look at that. Look at that. You'll appreciate that. Hey, if you're watching on the Patreon, thank you very much for supporting us on the Patreon. You get to watch this. You can see right now my hair currently, before I go to the hairdressers, is in almost full Michael McDonald mode.
I keep forgetting not everyone.
We'll never be the same again. My hair does not grow down, it grows out. And during lockdown, I went full Michael McDonald.
Oh my God.
Mm.
I love Michael McDonald, so that's just turned me on.
Yes, sadly, it's not the same fair for Alex, weirdly.
No.
She just says, why does your hair grow out? It's weird. I said, so we, and what's funny is we're recording this for Bank Holiday Monday. Happy Bank Holiday.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Neither of us are working. I'm probably working.
I might be working.
You might be working. We're both working.
Possibly, yeah.
But by which point I would have had a haircut, so it'll all be, this is out of fashion now.
Yeah.
So enjoy Michael McDonald while you have him.
I mean, I can't believe you've gone, you know, so committed to the bit with your Hawaiian shirt and small keyboard.
I wish I'd thought of that now. Things will never be the same again. I love Michael McDonald.
Yeah.
He's got a voice that can open garage doors. He's a beautiful man.
He is.
So that's development on my side of the world. The other development is, right, we are clearly doing well at the Cultaholic office because the beverage, the food and beverage delivery arrived last week. Don't know who orders it. It just turns up. We have in the office now cherry flavored 7-Up. That's a thing.
Apparently.
Never had one in my life.
Let's get a live taste test.
Okay, live taste test.
Tom Campbell with the cherry 7-Up free. On a Cultaholic Classic Raw Review.
Shit, that.
Yeah.
That's all right, actually. That's...
This is the best. This is the best podcast we've ever done. We've sang Malcolm McDonald and slurped a drink.
That's all right, Matt. Yeah. Are you a pop aficionado?
Yeah.
Would you like to partake in a little bit if I wipe?
I'm not a cherry
guy. Wipe the nib?
I'm not a cherry guy.
No?
No, cherry age used to make me always violently sick as a kid for some reason.
So it became how you met Louis?
Yeah, that is, yeah. When I was a young boy and Louis was a kitten, apparently we were both just there throwing up. 30 years later, we're just like, oh, look at us now.
Hey, look at us. Yes, look at us.
I am a pop aficionado because when we get the drinks deliveries, I always get affronted that I'm not consulted, seeing as I am the straight edge man at the office. And I'm just like, any good drinks delivery, you need a full fat cola. You need a sugar-free cola. You need some kind of lemonade, such as a 7-Up. You need a fruity beverage. You need some kind of flavored sparkling water and maybe another fruity beverage. And that's your basis. And an energy drink, basis covered. Sometimes we go a bit off the deep end.
But we do put a message in the chat saying who wants what. Do you not involve then? Well, are you misheard?
This one unheard, just, rather. This one just appeared. It was the time before that I rolled up my sleeves and was like, right, let's fucking go.
Maybe we make you head of sort of beverages.
Oh, can I be Commissioner of Food and Beverage?
Commissioner of Food and Beverage.
Excalibur was in PWG.
Petition to make Jack Atkins the head of the Commissioner of Food and Beverage for Cultaholic. Because we're all just chubsters here, really. And we just get like this monthly delivery of fizzy drinks and biscuits and chocolate and crisps.
Yeah.
And what was it that popped up in the delivery that we took the other day where we all went, hey, are we doing all right at the moment?
It was the multi-pack of mint Viscount biscuits.
It was Viscount biscuits, wasn't it? Yeah. We had Viscount biscuits.
And we were like, fuck me, we're doing all right.
It's like, we're breaking even now. Yeah. Brilliant. As a company, we must be, you know. It's fine. I don't want a bonus. I just want more Viscount biscuits.
More Viscount biscuits.
Yeah. Did we have some Biscoff biscuits as well?
We did. We had like Biscoff sandwich biscuits.
Yeah.
I fucking went through them like a German Semperar. I really did. I think Ashton had one. Oh, they're quite nice. And I just kind of floated over. And I was just like, oh, let me partake. I was like, right, they're mine then.
So what happened was, right, Ashton tried one and went, oh, they're nice. And then Jackin said, oh, can I grab the packet and try one? You try one. You went, oh. And then Ashton went to get the packet off you and you just went,
bitter. Just get a tetanus. Don't know where I've been.
if you're wondering like why triple jump content seems a bit different, maybe Ashton looks a bit weepy. It's because she got bitten by Jackins.
Legend says only a silver bullet can take me down. So.
Once he gets going, we chase him into the woods sometimes, like a silverback.
Be gone, you foul beast!
He just clutching the Biscoff biscuits in the middle of the woods.
Tom, get the clergy. He's gone feral again.
Call the vicar.
Be gone.
Adam going, why haven't these articles been written? Jackins is up a tree.
We have to get a medieval priest to chase him off. Proper blood and thunder bastard of a mustache. Wear one of those big cassocks, just like, he's got a sword.
Of Christ compels you.
Where'd he get a cannon?
How are you anyway, mate? Apart from that, are you all right?
Yeah, same as last week. I've just been, doing the same. I've just been playing GTA Online. I took a day off for the first time this year.
Well done, mate. Yeah,
played GTA all day.
Nice.
Oh, there was some bollocks with going out for breakfast. So Sean was like, ooh, should we go out?
Because you both had the same day off.
Well, she was meant to be in work, but she could just do it all from home. So she was like, I'm taking a morning. So on my day off, I got up and she had a lie in, even though she was in work. So I was furious about that. we're in Tynemouth, which is quite Tory, but it's a seaside town. So at the weekends and summer, it's unbearable because it's just everyone's there. But I forgot that because it's quite a weekendy town, loads of places are closed on a Monday.
Yeah.
So we went out for breakfast. First choice was closed. Second choice was closed. Third choice was closed. So we went to the only place that was open. And I've got a face on me by this time.
Because are you like me, where like, I'm just hungry now?
Yeah.
just worry. I think we're very similar in that regard. I get really grumpy if I'm hungry. I get really sad if I'm hungry sometimes as well.
I just start chewing around and Sean's just like, oh. And I have to apologise. Like, it's like, you know, like the fucking Snickers thing.
You're not you when you're hungry.
No, I am. I'm just dialed up to 12. I'm just like pure arsehole. I'm just like, oh, just bring me raw meat. So we go to this one place and for the listeners out there, I eat eggs every day. I've got a running tally in my diary of how many eggs I eat. So at the end of the year, I will know how many eggs exactly.
Do you not worry about becoming egg-bound?
Egg-bound?
It's when you can't poo because you eat too many eggs.
Oh, no, I'm regular.
Oh, yeah. Wow, what system you have.
Oh, yeah.
Because I hear being egg-bound is quite common.
Egg-bound?
Yeah.
I've been eating lots of eggs for years.
Wow.
I eat.
Either that or it's the sequel to Earthbound.
Mother! I eat like a 1920s strongman, but I don't do any exercise. So if I lifted one like round dumbbell, I'd be the size of a horse, but instead of just, you know, just eat all this eggs and drink milk and then just like lie down on the couch and cry. So we ended up going to this cafe and Sean went, Jack, they don't do eggs. I just went, right, stand up, we're going out.
I think you said it with a lot more piss and vinegar
we'd been sat down and like there's people around and she went she went up and had a look and came back and she said they've only really got like sausage and bacon boys, but the day before we'd had a roast dinner, so I was meated up and I was just like, I want eggs.
Just want some eggs. Now. I want eggs. Gotta balance it.
And she even said that she'd gone up and saw there's no eggs and thought, do I just order him a sandwich and say, there's your breakfast sandwich, shut up. She's like, no, because he'll booth off and throw it at the wall like a toddler. I wouldn't in public. I'm not that bad. But I just went, no. I said, we'll just order some coffees and we'll leave. And I went home and made my own eggs. And then I was happy again. I was like, oh, these eggs are delicious. What a lovely day. So that's all that's happened to me. Eggs.
Oh, well, I mean, for future reference, I mean, would you go back, had you not had a roast dinner on the Sunday, would you have been happy with like a sausage and bacon butty at the venue number 5?
Yeah. I was feeling very meaty.
Yeah.
At the risk of getting a bit vulgar, I had the roast dinner farts going on. So I was just like, no.
Overrun with meat.
Yeah.
Eggs to balance. I get it. You're like me then. Like, you get very grumpy when, or sad, or emotional when, like, Alex will always say to me, if I'm in a bad mood or if I'm feeling a little bit lost, she'll go, are you hungry or are you tired? And normally it's like, yeah, like I felt a bit shitty on Monday and I was just like, and I remember coming home and I just can't put my finger on it. I'm just really struggling today. Like, and I feel like I'm worried about this. I don't know if this is going to work. And she said, you do realize that you spent last week doing your day job and then overnights.
Yes.
You've had about 5 hours sleep. You are hungry and you are tired. Eat some food and go to bed because you're no good to me in this condition. Like, fair. That's fair. So we had dinner and I went to bed early. And then I felt fine the next day. I was like, all that stuff I was worried about was fine. It worked out grand.
How was Hell Week?
Hell Week, you know what? It was fun. I had a lovely time. I managed to get into the closest I could come to a decent routine where I would do. So last week I covered overnights on the local BBC station as well as doing Cultaholic because I'm clearly weird. And had a lovely week doing the show. The show was really fun. We had some WWE guys on, which was always good fun. And I like doing radio at that time of night. There's a magic about that time of night because you get some really fun callers on.
Yeah.
There's a special energy about late night phone in shows. There's a special energy. And I really love it. And I mean, you can listen back to them on the BBC Sounds app and hear some of the quite frankly bollocks we got up to in that week, but it was great fun. But then it was just then I'd get home, I'd be home by like 1:30, like I'd still be like buzzing between like 1:30 and 2:30. Mm. So I'd sit in bed. I was in the spare bed all last week, and that sucks as well because you know I'm even in not a naughty way, like I miss lying next to Alex on an evening. Like there's a normality to being in there with the person that you love. And even Alex went, I miss you this week. I said, oh, I missed you too. So I was in the spare bed from like half one. I got into bed and had the laptop, and I was prepping the news for the next day for Cultaholic.
Right.
Because one of my things is, because I do the news podcast, I'll sort of have a scout around and go, what's happening in the wrestling world? What can we talk about tomorrow? So I'll kind of do like not a cheat sheet, but just sort of like a summary of the rushes, the summary for the news of the day. So I'd be writing that to about half two, by which point I'd be nodding off from the laptop. They'll go, right, now is the time to sleep. And then I set my alarm for about probably half five, because that'll be when Alex's alarm goes off. So then we can spend a little bit of time together as she's getting up and ready in the morning. Mm-hmm. And that is normally my time to start getting ready to go to work anyway. So right. I did that. And I was here till about 3 o'clock every day. I went home, had a little sleep, said goodnight to Alex, went back to work. I did that for a week. And no wonder I was sad on Monday. Proper sad on Monday. Big shout to Chris, working class Chris, who was the producer, who bought in posh coffees all week.
Very nice.
He had some of those nice posh coffees in sachets.
Yeah.
So I drank excellent coffee all week.
Very good.
Which is half 12 in the morning. This is definitely what you need.
Yeah.
Like a nice posh coffee just to push you over the line.
Get you over the... Mm. Over the edge. That's the last thing you need on live radio.
That's the last thing you need.
Turn to Pete Price.
There's a name!
You're a Torak! You're a waste of space!
Is it true you're a lizard, Pete?
Shut up! I am not a lizard!
Another radio legend from the UK. Do look up Pete Price. The nice thing is, this week, I am 100% a slacker.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing one job all week.
Fucking, yeah.
I am a slacker. I am no good. I am living off the government. I don't know. I'm only doing one job all week.
Yeah.
I'm ashamed to myself.
Yeah, I mean...
One of those jobs is talking about wrestling with you.
But like we said many times, we're very lucky to have this job. It's barely work.
Alex described it this morning as I left as, you're off to the ice cream factory. I was like, yeah, fair. A bad day in this job is a good day in any other job.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, that's the way I think about it.
Yeah.
But we are here at the ice cream factory to talk about January the 15th, 1996. So Jackins is going to go through some of the rigors of the Wrestling Observer for this week. Let's take a look at some of the world news from this week. The UK box office number one is still Seven, still in there.
What's in the box?
The US box office number one is still 12 Monkeys.
Yeah.
What's in the Monkeys? The UK chart number one is Michael Jackson's Earth Song. And the US chart number one is Mariah Carey's One Sweet Day. Three of those four things will change next week.
Ooh.
World events, January the 17th sees Detroit center Steve Zerman score his 500th career NHL goal at the Red Wings as the Red Wings beat Colorado 3-2 at the Joe Louis Arena and joins Geordie Howe as the only player to score 500 goals for Detroit.
Gordie Howe.
I misread that.
The great Gordie Howe.
You are an NHLman.
Used to be a bit of an NHLman.
Because did I pronounce that right?
I don't know.
We'll guess so. Sorry
Gordie,
if I didn't.
No Gordie Howe. It was a weird one because when I was a kid, I got given a Detroit Red Wings poster when I was about three. So I've always gravitated towards them, but it's always been a kind of, yeah, hockey. I like hockey. Keep it, if it's on, I'll watch it. Even when I lived in Canada, I didn't even really watch that much hockey. Everyone was like, oh, the Maple Leafs are shit. I was like, yeah, the Maple Leafs are pretty shit. Went to one like B League game and it was great because I was third row. There's about 1,000 people there. I had M&Ms. There was a fella in a dog mascot suit and I wanted to batter him. And there was loads of fights and a good game of hockey. It was like, hockey's amazing. So,
have you been to any hockey in the UK?
Never.
Because there's a nice little bit of hockey in the UK.
Yeah. It was the Manchester Arena, the former MEN, the 20,000 seater. That used to be the Manchester Storm hockey arena. And then people are like, oh, no, we should just like put on like wrestling, UFC and massive, massive gigs. So at one point that was a hockey arena, but no, never been. I've never been to, was it the Whitley Bay Ice?
Yeah, that's it.
Gaff, that I've heard is not in tip-top condition anymore because it's very old.
It's not. It's seen better days as the Whitley Bay. But it was the home of the Whitley Warriors and they had a good run there. There were some WWE shows that came from there as well.
We were contemplating doing it for my birthday. Sean was like, do you want to go watch hockey? I was like, kinda. I was like, yeah, I'd like that. Get a hot dog, watch hockey, shout foul abuse at someone. And then it got round to it. And I was just like, do you know what? I just want to eat chili and sit on the couch. And she was like, you do that every day? I was like, yeah, but I want to do it and be praised for it. And she was like, well, okay, we'll do that instead. So,
Alex's dad used to be a rink announcer for an ice hockey team in the UK.
Oh, right.
For Manchester Storm.
Yeah, the Storm. So he did work, was it the MEN days or was it after?
Yeah, he was at the MEN days and he was for a little while at their rebirth at Altrincham.
Okay.
He was the voice of the Storm. Manchester Storm! That was John Hammond, Alex's dad.
The voice of the Storm is a cool nickname.
Isn't it great? The voice of the Storm.
It's like the Flashing Blade.
Oh, all the radio legends coming out tonight. January 17th also saw the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame get some new inductees. Gladys Knight and the Pips, Pink Floyd, Velvet Underground, Tom Donahue, and David Bowie.
Bowie
in the Hall of Fame.
Golden
Globes took place on the 21st of January. Sense and Sensibility winning Best Movie. Sharon Stone winning Best Actress. And Nicolas Cage winning Best Actor, as he should every year.
What came out in 95? Was that Leaving Las Vegas?
I think it might have been, yeah.
Because he won the Oscar for that. I know that much.
Let me check.
We'll find out.
We're going to do it live. Golden Globes, 1995. I can tell you that the movie that he won... The thing for... No, I want 1996 Golden Globes. Don't type
1996, Thomas.
What are we doing? What are we doing, Your Honour? Okay, so... Sharon Stone won Best Actress in a Motion Picture for Casino. And it was indeed Leaving Las Vegas that Nicolas Cage won the Best Actor for. Well done.
Thank you.
Nicole Kidman won Best Actress in a Musical Comedy.
What?
For... Doesn't tell me. Best actress in a musical or comedy. I'm going to have to go on to her.
Batman Forever.
Everybody knows that was the best comedy. I'm going to go onto a Wikipedia page so we can know this and one comedy. Come on.
I could be helping you out here, but I'm just watching you just think on your feet.
List of awards and nominations for Nicole Kidman. Received by Nicole Kidman. We'll find it. Film Festival Awards, International Theatre Awards, no. Major associations.
Okay. Golden Globes.
96. To Die For.
I thought that was earlier than that.
No, it came out in 95.
Okay, I always assumed that was like 89 or something like that.
There you go, the more you know. John Travolta won an award as well for Get Shorty.
Yeah, sure.
Best actor in a musical or comedy film. Yeah, well done to you.
Great, well done to you.
Brad Pitt won Best Supporting Actor for 12 Monkeys.
He's not in it much.
He's in it enough, apparently. Best supporting actor, so I guess he is supporting. Yeah. Sybil Shepherd won Best Actress in a Musical or Comedy TV Series, of course, Sybil.
Sybil, yeah. I used to watch that as a kid.
I used to watch it. It was on the Paramount Comedy Channel, wasn't it?
Oh, Channel 4. I was a terrestrial boy.
Oh, look at you. Mm. I was doing all right. Kelsey Grammer won Best Actor in a Musical or Comedy TV Series for... Frasier.
Oh, baby, I hear the blues come.
They're out of eggs.
Right, fucking leave it. What breakfast place doesn't do eggs?
They're calling again.
Frasier Crane wants eggs. Frasier Crane comes
put
in.
Put it in his song.
And he's just like, oh, we've got no eggs, Dr. Crane. Oh, fucking I am wounded.
Babe won Best Musical or Comedy Motion Picture.
Great film.
Yay. Well done to the talking pig. Good lad.
With the voice of Chucky Finster.
Oh, he was, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Very... Is it Tara Strong? No, I'm not going down. I'm not going to ask any more questions of things I've not got notes on. So that's the real world.
Yay!
That's the real world this week. What's happening in the wrestling world?
world.
Dave Meltzer's been a very busy boy. So busy that I didn't
realize. So busy, he hasn't got time to tidy his room.
He hasn't, the fucking filthy Doyle.
But, filthy Doyle!
I didn't... There was two newsletters in this week in 1996, and I didn't realise there was a second one until about 10 minutes before we had to...
My fault. I should have warned you.
No, I should have done my job.
I mean, there...
But... fuck me. We corralled
Bank
the best
holiday,
of both.
Fine.
So, the first one, it was the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards 1995.
Sorry, mate, I just burped at the start of your segment. That's fine.
I was going to say I've done worse.
These are too casual, aren't they? Think about this the other day. These are too casual. I feel like the news videos are like nice, precise, concise, 8 minutes, well-structured, placed, bit of banter in between, and that's fine. Call Ollie Podcast goes on a couple of tangents, but it's fine. We just sit here going, fuck, shit, eggs, blood. These are too casual.
I mean, you know, this is our real lives. It's just like, wrestling's an obligation. But eggs and Frasier is life.
It's an occupation and an obligation.
That is a very good line. I'm going to put my head in the bin after this. Fuck me. Do you want some wrestling awards, Tom?
Let's talk about eggs for a bit. Now, yeah, go on, get some wrestling news from Dave. Dave's been a busy boy.
Let's get some awards, because this podcast has never get one. Wrestler of the Year.
Yeah.
Mitsuhara Misawa.
Kenny Omega. No.
1994, Toshiaki Kawada.
Nice.
Outstanding Wrestler, Manami Toyota.
Nice.
Babyface of the Year, Pere Araguaia.
Okay.
Heel, Masa Chono. Mm-hmm. Feud, Dean Malenko versus Eddie Guerrero in ECW.
Cool.
Best tag team, Misawa and Kobashi. Most improved, Johnny B. Bad.
Oh, okay.
The year before Diesel won it. Most unimproved, Hulk Hogan. 1994 winner, Hulk Hogan.
Hogan, I think, has a strong run with this particular category until he retires.
He does. Most obnoxious,
Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan. 1994. Hulk Hogan. Best on interviews, Cactus Jack.
Nice.
Most charismatic, Shawn Michaels. Best technical wrestler, it's Chris Benoit. Best brawler, Cactus Jack. 1994, Cactus Jack. 1993, Cactus Jack. Best high flyer is Rey Mysterio Jr. Most overrated, Hulk Hogan. 1994, Hulk Hogan. 1993,
Hulk Hogan.
Sid.
Oh, Sid.
Most underrated.
Hulk Hogan. Most underrated. Is it a WWF wrestler?
This is a WWF wrestler.
Lower card. My Janae.
No, Skip. Chris Skip. Candido.
Yeah, that's a good shout, actually.
Best promotion. New Japan Pro Wrestling. WWF was sixth. WCW were an honourable mention. They didn't make the top 10.
Wow.
Yeah. Best weekly show was ECW. Raw was in fifth. Nitro was in sixth. Match of the year was Manami Toyota versus Kyoko Inoue. Rookie of the year is Pere Aguayo Jr. Manager of the year, Jim Cornette. Same in 94, same in 93. Mm. Best announcer, Jerry Styles. Worst announcer, never mind that shit. Here comes Steve McMichael. But there was some other... They were the full main ones. The other highlights. The worst card of the year was WCW Uncensored. Mm-hmm. The most disgusting promotional tactic was just Mean Gene just lying on the phone. Worst wrestler was The Renegade. Worst feud was Hogan versus The Dungeon of Doom. Worst promotion was WCW with WWF in fifth. Best gimmick?
Bob Ollie.
Disco Inferno.
What?
Worst gimmick, Goldust.
Disco Inferno. Wow, bugger off. They're the way around.
Yeah.
Dave.
Most embarrassing, Hulk Hogan.
God fucking damn it, Dave.
Dave. Disco Inferno.
No.
Best gimmick.
Fuck off, Dave.
Of 1995.
I hate Dave for that. Goldust is the best gimmick of the year. Dave's like, it's the worst.
Oh, it's just,
what do you know, Dave?
It's weird, isn't it? I'd rather you just be the natural still.
I'd prefer that.
I'm about to burp now.
Just burp into the mic. That's what all the cool kids do.
We're fucking rubbish today, aren't we?
We are the best, mate.
Oh, actually,
the best we've ever done this.
We're just humble. We're going to go upstairs and eat our Viscount and laugh at our bank accounts.
I am well humble. I am humble from the top of my head down to my massive penis.
I've seen it.
It's whopping.
Yeah. It's like a baguette.
I should put meat in it.
We've gone off.
Am I drunk? I'm not drunk. I don't think I'm drunk. I've had a drink for like 3 days. I'm going to WWF tomorrow. This is what I'm in the Raw review mindset. I'm going to the WWE tomorrow.
You are?
At time of recording. I shall have a pint then. It'll be the first pint I've had in about a week and a half. I'm looking forward to it.
And tomorrow night, I'm going to have a beverage because I'm seeing The Room in the cinema.
Yeah.
I've gutted a clash with the house show because it's been a long time since I've been to a good house show. But yeah,
By the time you watch this, it's all happened. But yeah, so basically the office is divided, isn't it? Because half of us are going to the WWE live event in Newcastle. The other half is going to see a showing of The Room.
Yeah. So I've got to get a lot of plastic spoons thrown at my head.
Do you know what? Tomorrow's a really busy night in Newcastle in general because you've got the WWE show, you've got The Room showing that you're going to, which looks amazing.
Yeah.
Those conspiracy guys, the podcast, is at the Clooney. They're doing a live podcast at the Clooney.
Oh, bloody hell.
They're brilliant. A nice chat with Gordo the other day for the radio, and they're brilliant. And Corinne Bailey-Ray is on.
I think the
O2.
I've seen Corinne Bailey-Ray.
She's lovely. I had a chat with her the other night.
Yeah?
Yeah, for the radio. Me and Corinne had a lovely chat.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Bezzies.
Talked about Put Your Records On and all that.
Yeah.
Her big hit. Because when that came out, I was working at HMV. Stacking shelves. And one of the first times I was allowed the honour of doing the chart wall.
The honour, the pain in the arse of doing the chart wall.
It was treated as like a great badge of honour. Do the chart wall on a Sunday. And it was the week that Corinne Bailey-Ray went number one.
Oh, lovely.
With her debut album. So I got to tell her that. And I was like, she's like, oh, I love that. That's cool.
I used to hate doing the chart wall in HMV.
Yeah. I liked doing the chart wall.
We had an upstairs and a downstairs chart wall. That was the thing.
Which was the upstairs? Downstairs, where was the front door? Upstairs or the downstairs?
Both.
Okay, so it was like a multi-leveled thing.
Yeah.
Which was the high street level?
Upstairs.
So I reckon your upstairs had the chart wall, like the main, like,
top chart wall was
upstairs then.
Yeah.
Because they want that off the high street normally. Yeah. And then downstairs, you would have had either DVD chart or specialist chart.
No, another normal chart and DVD chart.
Oh,
both.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, so you had two chart walls.
Well, it was the Liverpool one, HMV, which at the time was one of the main flagship one, so they were just like two charts, and when we didn't have enough stock, we were just like, we don't have enough stock.
That's it. Yeah, so if I remember Liverpool one, because you had like the street level, and then you had like a walkway that was built that was near a World Buffet.
Yes.
So you're around there. Yeah. It was. I don't know whether we talked about it, and we must have done because we've done so much chatting about stuff. But I know that Everton had a club shop.
They still do.
And I know as a Liverpool fan, this is dirty talk.
It was a hat off. Yeah.
You've got to tip the hat. Everton, Liverpool's arch rivals in the soccer, they opened a club shop in the Liverpool shopping centre called Liverpool One. So the shopping centre is called Liverpool One. So Everton called their club shop Everton 2. So therefore the address would always read Everton 2, Liverpool 1. Like, I admire that.
Yeah.
I admire, as much as it pains you, I'm sure, have tipped the hat to it, as you say.
Well, we went over two legs because they opened the main club shop by the ground and that's Everton 1. But I think the postcode there is like Liverpool 18. So
I think the postcode has changed there to Liverpool are the best and you're shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, where were we? So those are the awards.
Those are the awards. We've got a couple of tidbits of news.
Oh, go for it.
So last week we were talking about, obviously we've got the, after this episode of Raw, this is the go home for the Royal Rumble. So we've got another lovely watch along.
Yeah, so watch along is forthcoming next week, I think.
Yeah, it is.
Wow. We're going to get together and watch Royal Rumble 1996. I can't wait. Love the Rumble.
Oh.
Love the Rumble.
So I mentioned last week that Sabu was like, oh, get me in the Rumble. And Paul Heyman said, you're not going in the fucking Rumble. And they're like, all right. So according to Dave, the situation with Sabu in the Rumble got even stranger and left the WWF totally frustrated by the end of the week.
Okay.
It was presumed to be a dead deal after Heyman said, no. Sabu had initially had friends contact JJ Dillon at WWF. WWF agreed to use Sabu initially, presumably for the same $5,000 figure they were offering other outsiders for one shots.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier in the week, Sabu was convinced by friends and business acquaintances, including NWA promoter Dennis Coraluzzo, who hates Paul Heyman because of Shane Douglas throwing down the belt. So Dennis Coraluzzo said to Sabu, don't listen to Paul Heyman. Do the Rumble. Fuck it, do the Rumble. It's you. You're Sabu. You're in-ring career. It's, you know, everyone's in-ring career. It's a fleeting thing. So do it. Take the money. And he went, all right, yeah. Instead of Sabu making the call to WWF saying we're back on, he got his uncle, the Sheik, to do it. Who at first said no to the WWF, and later in the week, after being offered a booking payoff rumoured to be $3,000 from Bruce Pritchard, which may have included him accompanying Sabu to the ring, although it's not clear. He changed his tune and went, oh, if I'm getting $3,000, yeah, Sabu will do it. WWF then taped Royal Rumble promos with Sabu's name being part of the show during the latter part of the week, and WWF announced on his hotline that Sabu from ECW would be in the Rumble. Bruce Pritchard then offered Heyman several WWF wrestlers to work ECW in exchange for using Sabu. Heyman said, no, you're not having Sabu. I'm not having your wrestlers. Wow. I don't want any of my people on pay-per-view. So Heyman said to Sabu, you're not doing it. And Sabu went, yeah, I'm not doing it. So apparently what had happened was, because this is when Heyman's trying to negotiate for pay-per-view, barely legal. He thinks it's going to be the next step to take ECW to the next step. He'd promised those willing to put him on pay-per-view that he would have entirely different performers than WWF and WCW. So he said, you won't see anyone from those things. It's all ECW talent.
Right.
Such ECW homegrown names as Shane Douglas and Terry Funk. and he wanted to avoid the perception of being a minor league feeder system to WWF.
Right. I mean, you are.
You are, but the people don't know it.
Yeah. How strange.
Yeah.
I just think I think when we touched on this briefly last week, and I think that there is something in it, in the sense that when you hand over your talent to the WWF, you're kind of at the whims of WWF. And if you're presenting Sabu as part of your big main event for your pay-per-view, and if Sabu gets fucking hoyed out by Sparky Plug.
Yeah.
Like,
he looks shite.
He looks shit.
Yeah.
Unless you have some sort of deal in place that says, this is how we want Sabu to enter the Rumble, for how long, and how he leaves. And like, this is a contract that says this is exactly how it'll go down, no more, no less. But I doubt that kind of deal was struck.
Well, apparently they said that Sabu would exit and Sabu could bring his own table for this by basically throwing someone out and then diving over the top and then through a table and saying, oh, he doesn't know he's a madman, etc.
So eliminating himself in the process. That wouldn't have been bad, actually.
It wouldn't have been bad, but at the same time, they say this to him, and then he could get there, and like you said, they'd be like, nope, Bob Sparkle or Holly's going to throw you over the top.
Yeah.
So.
That's their plans changed, brother.
Well, it wasn't a good week for Paul Heyman, because he was threatening to sue WCW.
Oh, wow.
Hotline. Terry Taylor said the ECW champion was a drug addict. And Paul Heyman was like, he's fucking not. I googled who the ECW champion was. It was Raven.
Oh.
Moving on. Dan Severn was at Dan Severn was at the WCW offices on the 11th of January. He was offered no specific role or concrete amount of money, but WCW expressed interest in him. And this comes after WWF was saying to Dan Severn, come in. And he was like, I don't know. So WCW have got wind of it. And like, Dan Severn, come in. And he's like,
Is it more because WWF are going, hey, come over here?
More
That's
than
probably what it
more
is,
than
isn't
likely,
it?
Yeah.
You know, there's another little bit of Dan Severn news that I think I picked up that you didn't clock.
Oh, yeah.
And I just want to share this
Go
dead
on.
Quick.
Hit me some Severn.
So, Dave in The Observer, this is from a few days before. The biggest crowd for an indie show in a long time took place in Battle Creek, Michigan, for a show billed as a shoot fighting rather than pro wrestling event promoted by Kit Likins, who's an area kickboxer, and held in conjunction with martial arts seminars conducted by Dan Severn, Ken Shamrock, Oleg Taktarov. And I love this because it's Battle Creek, Michigan. Because there's a wrestling element to it. Shoot seminar also conducted by Ron Van Cleef.
You got me there. I actually thought you were going to say Van Damme.
Ron Van Cleef in Battle Creek, Michigan. Anyway, it drew about 3,000 fans, $20 a ticket.
That's good gate.
Nice bit of gate, that. Main event is all we care about.
Shoot fighting main event.
Kind of.
Yeah.
For the WKC World Heavyweight title, it's Dan Severn versus D'Lo Brown in a steel cage match.
You're looking at the real deal now.
You're looking at the shoot deal now. Severn tackled Brown so hard into the cage that it collapsed. And some of the wrestlers had to hold the cage in place for the rest of the match. Both that match and a match with pro wrestlers that included Kayser Kalman Jr. and Scott D'Amore were worked shoot fat fights, with the latter stealing the show. Scott D'Amore had the best match of the night. I'm surprised that the Severn D'Lo Brown collapsing cage match didn't win that, to be honest with you.
I fucking love wrestling.
Wrestling's amazing, isn't it? Wrestling's amazing. Absolutely amazing. So what a week for Dan Severn.
Fuck me. So...
This is even before D'Lo Brown is even the real deal now. Because he hasn't debuted in the WWF
yet. No, he hasn't,
yet.
No.
I think he might have been on a Superstars as AC Connor.
Oh, yeah, more than likely. But he won't come in, what, early 97, late 96?
He will come in as part of the Nation, but not really a named part of the Nation.
He's just a bow tie wearing.
Yeah, he was a big set bow tie boy.
Yeah. I love D'Lo Brown. I was always a big D'Lo fan.
He was great. He was in Wigan the other night. Oh, Grimsby.
And Liverpool. He's been doing the rounds.
He's been doing the rounds a little bit, and he had a curry in Grimsby.
Oh, he had fish and chips somewhere as well, didn't he?
Yeah. I like that all these companies are just taking pictures of D'Lo having his dinner.
I was like, is that D'Lo Brown? I was like, yeah, he's having a scran. It's like, D'Lo, can we take a picture of you? And he's like, yeah.
All right, man.
you're looking at the real meal now. Whoa. Going to kick your sorry ass out on the street.
Oh. What if he...
Oh.
D'Lo, we haven't got time to take you to a restaurant. Just pop in this Tesco. Get a sandwich. Get a bag of crisps. Get a drink. What would he say?
You're looking at the meal deal now.
Say it a bit louder for the people at the back.
You're looking at the meal deal now. Susie said Tesco, and oh, for fuck's sake. The meal deal now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
WCW. All wrestlers now have to leave title belts with WCW company officials after television tapings rather than carrying the belts with them.
Why?
They're paranoid after they had Medusa throw a title in the bin. They're just like... It's like, nah, fucking give Big Goldie back. Did you be paranoid after the fact Ric Flair took Big Goldie to WWF in 92?
Oh, you would have thought so, wouldn't you?
91?
I would be... No, it was 91, wasn't it? No.
It was 91 because the Rumble was 92.
He won the 92 Rumble. I'd be happy with that rule. I'd be paranoid taking the belt with me places.
Yeah.
When I started here, I took the Cultaholic Championship on a UK tour, and I felt very paranoid carrying that around. Like if I drop this, if I break this, this is like I'm not even properly signed a contract with this company yet, and I'm carrying around their championship, like visiting friends in Shrewsbury and Wolverhampton with the belt and stuff.
Were you wearing the title underneath your blazer jacket like Vince McMahon?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. What was lovely was I genuinely, and you know, It wasn't a work, by the way. It wasn't kayfabe. I took the belt everywhere I went for about a month. And I had it in my rucksack, which was great because the one day I was just walking across the high-level bridge in Newcastle and somebody stopped me and went, are you Tom Campbell? And I went, yeah. Oh, I've been seeing you on Cultaholic. I said, do you want a photo with the belt? I've got it. And then, you've really got it. I said, yeah, take it with me everywhere. So I kept the, you know.
Wonderful.
Kept the dream alive. Yeah. A photo with the belt on the bridge.
And that fan
went on to be Ken Shamrock.
If it wasn't for you, he wouldn't have won the UFC Super Fight Tournament in 1994.
He wouldn't have gone back in time.
He wouldn't know.
And won the tournament. He'd gone to have a very successful career as Drew McIntyre.
1-2-3 Kid has been in physical therapy for a hip injury and missed the entire last tour, but will be back for the Rumble. Right, so this leads into last week when we were laughing at the fact that Sid did the job for Bob Holly.
Yes!
Right, so Sid suffered a neck injury on December 9th and it got progressively worse. After the Nassau Coliseum show, he was pulled from the semi-main and moved to a prelim match in New Haven, where he was asked to put over his friend, Bob Holly, which he did, and then he left.
Are they mates?
Apparently.
Oh, that's lovely.
The boys all, brackets all many, came to the conclusion that Sid's injury was a work and he left over being asked to put Holly over in, you know, these prelim matches. He's supposed to be out of action for 8 weeks. There may have been contact with WCW, either from him or from WCW, also believing that he was gone from WWF, with the possibility of bringing Sid back once again to WCW. Ah. But because of past problems, WCW decided not to pursue the situation. Because he's a bit mental at times, Sid, isn't he?
He's a bit psycho.
He's a bit of a loose
at times.
He's not a loose cannon. No,
that's a very different man. So no Sid and the Kid for a bit.
No Sid and the Kid.
But arguably, the Million Dollar Corporation, as we'll see on Raw, has never been better.
No, definitely not. Now it's down to one man.
And the right man. Tatanka.
Let's go down. One last little bit before we get into the lovely go home that is Raw. And we were chatting a little bit about this, that WWF/Titan, as Dave always likes to put, he always calls him Titan. Titan got an item planted in the gossip section of New York Daily News on January 15th and alluded to it on Raw. It read, Ted Turner is ready to get into the ring with WWF honcho Vince McMahon, say sources. We hear Turner, the owner of the rival World Championship Wrestling, CNN, and the Atlanta Braves, wants to scalp McMahon because the WWF has parodied him sketches using a tall, thin, mustachioed man with a silly-sounding southern drawl named Billionaire Ted. Turner, who needs this little wrestling outfit like we need a Nehru jacket, don't know what that is, wasn't mad because one skit implied his wrestlers used steroids. Rather, say sources, he was angered because he was portrayed as a hillbilly with a bad suit and the Ted's a little sensitive. Added a sort, Billionaire Ted doesn't like Billionaire Ted and wants the feud to end. Expect a Bischoff response to the item in the paper this week.
I love that, though. Just ahead of Raw, they just go, we're not doing it because we're worried about them.
But I was laughing at it. I was like, oh, Ted Turner's ready to get into the ring with Vince McMahon. And Vince McMahon's like, yeah, Ted, you won't face me. Cut to a year later, Eric Bischoff every week on Nitro. Vince McMahon, I'm going to kick you in the head. You get here and I'll kick you in the head. Come here. We're having a match. It was a slamboree. And I'm going to kick you in the head. You fanny.
That's exactly what he said. And suddenly Vince McMahon is like, we're just a mum and pop company. Do you know who Vince McMahon is? Right? In the video game canon. Right? You know Mario? You know the Mario games?
Yes.
Vince McMahon is Boo. When his back's turned, he's like, ah! You look at him, he's like, no, I'm shy. I'm shy.
Oh, and then he's turning around. He's like,
no, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. WWF stars were on the telly this week before Raw.
Oh, bloody hell.
Shawn Michaels was on the Jenny Jones show.
Great.
Where a wrestling fanatic was a guest and got to meet his favorite wrestler.
Lovely.
And this was also the week where Razor Ramon appeared on Jerry Springer.
Oh.
So there was a famous episode of Jerry Springer with two kids who had been, I believe that was it. They had Hydea and Tyler, who were young kids living with HIV/AIDS. And they brought them on Jerry Springer to talk about it and their experiences. And they said that, you know, we're wrestling fans. And lo and behold, they bring out Razor Ramon, complete wearing the Intercontinental title, as a surprise guest for them.
Oh, that's nice.
It's a lovely little bit of good PR for the WWF this week. And it's, you know, a nice thing to do. I know I don't want to make it sound as cold and callous as it was good PR. It kind of was.
Yeah.
But when Razor passed about a month or so back, I saw clips of this doing the rounds again. It was just a cool little moment from 90s television, Razor Ramon, appearing on an episode of Jerry Springer that wasn't completely awful.
Is this before the Jerry Springer show went off the deep end?
It was starting to go that way.
Yeah.
They'd really kick it into gear in like 97, 98. Around, basically, Jerry Springer's attitude era is around the corner. This is the new generation era of the Jerry Springer show.
It's mad looking back on it and just forgetting how big the Jerry Springer show
was. Oh, yeah. It was massive.
Massive.
Yeah. It's a piece of history, that is.
Yeah.
I remember when I was in New York in 2010, they were taping an episode of Jerry Springer live in Times Square, where they were just having Jerry doing cut-ins for like a best of clips and stuff. But that was a really cool moment, just to see Jerry up on, like, everybody chatting Jerry. And it was even weirder because I felt a tap on my shoulder. I turned around and it was a girl that I went to college with.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. And we dated for like about 3 months. And like she was like, in New York. In New York, it was the weirdest thing. And every year when that picture comes up in my timeline, I go, do you remember that? Wasn't that weird?
Oh.
Anyway, cheers. So that happened in this week as well. Razor and Mom's on the Jerry Springer show.
Very nice.
Mm. Anyway, let us get into the rigors of Monday Night Raw for January the 15th, 1996. We get a short video acknowledging Martin Luther King Day, but without saying Martin Luther King Day.
No.
Like, we know, you know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here. A weird little bit just to kind of acknowledge it without acknowledging it. Very strange. We then get a logo on the screen saying viewer discretion is advised.
I saw that and thought, here we fucking go.
That's never happened on Raw before, has it? So you saying that makes me realize this has not happened on Raw before.
No, this hasn't, because Raw's been tame until the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and there's a few things that maybe suggest there might be viewer discretion advised.
Yeah.
Which we'll touch on. Tonight, The Undertaker will battle Isaac Yankum, DDS, and Goldust will speak about his feelings towards Razor Ramon. Or will he? After Goldust showed off a heart-shaped Razor tattoo on Superstars, a match was set between the two for Sunday's Royal Rumble. Goldust will talk about it later on tonight. That is the table is set for Raw. We've now officially got the old music properly back, which is so much better than, I know it was last week, but it's so much better than that. I Like It Raw.
I Like It Raw, I re-listened to it again recently, and it's odd. And then I remembered how much Vince apparently spent on that intro to use it for 2 months. But I did like the...
It's a Jim Johnston classic, that pulsating beat.
Yeah, I had nostalgia for that track, because I remember when it was unleashed, I went, the classic Raw theme, and you looked at me and went, what do you mean classic Raw? I don't know if it was on a game or something, and it was just unlocked, because I didn't realize that it was only around for a couple of weeks.
I never really remembered it as the classic Raw theme. For me, like, the classic Raw theme, when I think of, when you describe the classic Raw theme, it's this one now.
Yeah.
Like, I have no real recollection of I Like It Raw. But again, I was a lapsed fan at this point, so
me too.
Wasn't deeply into it.
I just can't wait until the fucking Raw theme comes, which I still listen to. So I still listen to the full version sometimes, and just start just choke slamming the cat. I'm just like,
have it as an alarm.
Oh god, there'd just be a path of destruction. I'd just bound out of bed and straight through a window, just in the garden, throttling wood pigeons. Just like, get out of here, little fucker.
I tried a new alarm this morning and it didn't go down well, because my alarm normally goes off at about 4:45.
Ooh.
Ew. I like being up early. But what I'll sometimes do is I'll have an alarm on my Fitbit, which I'm not wearing today, but because it wasn't charged, I was like, I'll just put it on my phone, it'll be fine. Anyway, and I thought, I'll have that as a ringtone, as an alarm tone, and it did not go down well. Let me find it. I don't know why Alex didn't like waking up to this. Turn that fucking thing off. It's too fucking early for this bullshit. Turn it off right now. I don't know why she didn't like it.
I'd be like, oh, is it time to go bowling? 80.
Every day is bowling time.
It used to be.
There's a video that does the rounds every so often. It's a CG animation of a bowling pin, like reading bad news in the paper. And like just going to work and being depressed. And then something happens and he passes away and you see his body on the ground and it zooms out and then the words strike appear. like it's a bowling alley graphic.
I love bowling alley graphics, they're so good.
Who makes them?
A fucking artist.
If you make them, please reach out. We'd like to thank you.
It was the Bauhaus movement in the 1920s Germany. They were just like, do you know what? Bowling alley graphics. This is going to be our bread and butter.
Get this, lads. Bowling alley graphics. Marty Jannetty versus Owen Hart is our opening match. Fast-paced, liquid wrestling from the off between these two. They are beautiful together.
Yes.
During the match, Jerry Lawler on commentary says he has a hot flash about why Razor Ramon is currently heading towards the arena. To inform Goldust, he's enrolled in the Panty of the Month Club. Hot flash, he says.
Yeah, he
has a hot flash, apparently.
But the Panty of the Month. And even Vince goes, what the fuck's the Panty of the Month? And he goes, oh, it's like Fruit of the Month. It's like, fuck off, Jerry. It's like... That doesn't even mean anything. he's put that in his head. He's clearly thought that on the sign. He's like, Hooga! And he said it and thought, oh shit, I haven't actually, you know, like workshopped this or fine-tuned
this through. Just hoya out into the world. Owen is busting out the suplexes in this one. An overhead suplex, a gut-wrench suplex, regular suplex, all of them. Jannetty's firing back with a diamond dust. And once again, thank you, Jared. Thank you to Marty Jannetty for keeping the dream alive of one of my favorite wrestling moves. and a rebound power slam to get him back into it. Jannetty goes for the top rope, changes his mind, gets down, and clotheslines Owen over the top instead. That was a strange moment.
I liked that.
Yeah?
It showed ring generalship because like
nice.
Owen was on the floor. Jannetty gets the top ropes. Owen gets up and he's clearly out of the way. So Marty, rather than standing there like a dick waiting for him to, you know, get in position for the spot, improvises, jumps down, clotheslines him out. No problem with that.
Fair. Yeah. Fair, okay. Hart will get back into the ring and win with a go-behind wheelbarrow cradle. I think there's probably a better name for it.
Yeah, but...
But so like so basically he gets into the ring, he does the go-behind as if he's going for a German.
Yeah.
And he ends up like scooping Jannetty's legs.
So he flips and lands on his back. So... The top of Jannetty's head is pointing towards Owen's shins. He's basically looking at his balls.
Mm.
So Owen grabs his
balls.
Grabs his legs, looks like he's gonna like twist it into a sharpshooter.
Yeah, it looked like it was gonna be a sharpshooter, didn't it? But then he rolled through and so then he was on his back as well.
Yeah.
Pulling back on his legs. Potentially like, almost close to having his own shoulders to the mat as well. But it didn't happen that way. The ref counted Jannetty's shoulders down. Owen got a 3, clean as a whistle.
I really like this. Good opener,
match.
Good chemistry. And I've put that with it being a win out of nowhere rather than a sharpshooter or a defensive win, it does protect Marty a little heading into the Rumble whilst making Owen look strong, makes him look like unpredictable. It's like this is how good Owen Hart is. He can just get one out of the bag.
Yeah.
So great booking.
Because the big talking point was like both these guys are in the Rumble.
Yeah.
You know, or could either of these guys head to WrestleMania? And so everything is focused on the Rumble.
Yeah.
Every story is laser focused on the Rumble. Todd Pettingill is here to plug the Rumble for this Sunday. He's got big news, bigger than Waterfall with TLC and One Eye Lopez or whatever that is.
That made him sound ignorant rather than cool.
Yeah, it did, didn't it? Yeah. It made him like, I don't get why you go, popular music, what's that? Rubbish. He is, of course, referring to TLC winning Video of the Year for Waterfall at the MTV Music Awards. Also at the Grammys winning Best R&B Album and Best R&B Performance of the Year for Creep. So Creep. Yeah. Creeping on the down low. We sing that to Pablo quite a lot.
Because he's a creep.
Because like he will just stare at you from a distance and like walk very slowly towards you. Yeah. And so we'll just start going, so Creep. Yeah. Creeping on the down low. Or you'd be in bed and like you'll see, like he's very far away in the hallway, but you can just see his little head poking around like from a distance. What are you doing? What are you over there? Little creep. Pervy creep. Or some mornings, where I've just woken up and I've just looked at my side of the bed near my bedside table and he sat like next to my bedside table just staring at me. I'm like, you all right, mate? Oh, good, you're up. Come on.
Was he ready for some Wii Sports this morning?
He was. He wasn't in the room for Wii Sports, sadly. he was when that went off. He was curled up on the sofa when that went off. And I went into the living room this morning, and he was just like, meh.
A lovely lad.
He is a lovely lad. He's a dirty liar though, because I came home. Alex had the day off yesterday, and I came home, and he came straight up to me as I stood in the kitchen. Just looked straight up and went, meh! And went and stood next to his bowl that was empty. And Alex went, I fed him an hour ago. You little liar. He's like, meh!
You're just like, bugger off.
Yeah, I like it. He's a chancer.
Go do your homework.
He's a chancer. He's like, I am so hungry. Father, I die. I die of the hunger. And Alex's like, I fed him an hour ago. Oh, Father, she starved me. Ah, fuck you both then. Little bastard. I love him to bits. So that's so the big thing that he's excited about is the brand new WWF program, the WWF Free For All. A 30-minute free event that'll be on the pay-per-view channel before the pay-per-view actually starts. I'm surprised they weren't doing this at this point.
So am I, actually.
I thought it was a regular thing.
Yeah.
Maybe they had like little like Action Zone style like talking up the show.
Yeah.
But they're bigging this up as like the cameras are going live on the arena 30 minutes before the show. We've even got a match for you, which you can watch before the show starts. And the match they announce on the free-for-all will see... So basically, everybody is getting numbers for the Rumble, but two wrestlers will get blanks like Scrabble. Where you get a blank, it's worth 8 points. And what happens with those two is they will wrestle on the free-for-all. The winner will get number 30 in the Rumble, and the loser will get number one. That is, this hands down, my favorite Rumble-themed gimmick match.
Yes.
I love that. When they do winner gets number one, loser gets... winner gets number 30, loser gets number one.
It kind of reminds me of like when we just have an idle chat in the office, like we often do. And we're saying a way to make what they should do to make some of the events seem important again. Because obviously Rumble leads to Mania, and that's about it. And I was saying that they should bring back the old thing where the winner of the King of the Ring gets the main event at SummerSlam, just to try and bring everything circular. And I suggested that they should have a Survivor Series, some kind of match where whoever wins the Survivor Series gets the number 30 spot in the Royal Rumble.
Nice.
So then you're building from Survivor Series to Rumble to Mania. So you've got like a
thread that runs through them all. So, I like that. Yeah. I do like that. Or maybe like maybe a team at Survivor Series, whichever team wins, go into the Rumble. The losers don't.
Yeah.
It's all about just finding purpose for Survivor Series that isn't just who's got the best coloured shirt.
Yeah.
Red or blue. I hate that.
Because they all work for the same company and, you know, the fans. I don't think there's going to be that many fans out there who are just like, fucking love Raw, never watch SmackDown, it's shit. It's like, no, you're a WWE
exactly.
fan. You watch both.
And Survivor Series, you can have so much, you can be creative with that format
of
building a team. You know, I like it when you've got like a championship feud which rolls over into Survivor Series where like the challenger and the champion will pick a team.
Yeah.
And then a future title situation depends on it. I love the idea of you know, getting the heavyweight like the men's heavyweight division and having them build teams of like who they think they should stand with. Like the idea of, you know, Roman Reigns going, I don't trust anybody outside the Usos, and maybe Solo Sikoa, get him a stable boy. And then Drew going, right, Bobby Lashley, we hate each other, but you're probably the best at tackling him, get on my team. And then there's that extra little element of, well, they get on.
I used to really like Survivor Series for that. And especially when all the teams would be thematic. And
yeah, when they all had names.
Yes.
Yes, name the teams, you cowards.
Fucking, it's... Wrestling's easy.
It is so easy. Oh my God, wrestling's so easy.
Oh.
annoys me when people don't get that. We hear from Diesel, who's upset with people saying Shawn Michaels or Vader are winning the Rumble. Set your clocks. It'll be Diesel time at the Rumble. We then get a new vignette for Vader from the Rocky Mountains in Boulder, Colorado. I can't believe how much they were pushing Vader in the run up to the Rumble. Yeah. Like, genuinely presenting him as a force of nature. And I love it. I was a lapsed fan at this point. And I know Vader's run was, it had its moments. It had its hot flashes, but it was mostly tepid. Yeah. But they couldn't have done any more in terms of making him out to be a viable threat in the Rumble itself.
And as we'll see in his first couple of weeks, fuck me.
Yeah, they do a lot with him. I'm looking forward to seeing how they book him in the Rumble.
Yeah.
Until
Shawn Michaels shits himself at SummerSlam.
Over to Doc Hendricks, who's hanging around in the hallways of the arena still. He's been there all night, saying that Razor Ramon is on his way to the arena to get a piece of gold dust. This is maybe the third time we've cut to Doc Hendricks in an empty hallway waiting for Razor Ramon to arrive. He is there specifically to grab a chat with Razor when Razor gets there. I want to put a pin in that.
We'll put a pin in that.
This
isn't the first or the last time we'll see Doc Hendricks tonight.
No. Sonny is playing pool in a sexy way. She says, you like it, I like it, everybody likes it, Raw. She says, as in the show, she doesn't like Raw. Sexy pool from Sonny.
She was a sexy pool playing woman.
She was.
They're going more overt here.
Yeah.
Like you're saying, like we say every week, there's a sea change coming.
Mm-hmm.
We're just getting little ripples.
True Crime featuring Tammy Sitch, currently on youtube.com/cultaholic. Yeah. If you want to see how all that worked out. The Ringmaster makes his way to the ring.
Good hand.
Ted DiBiase, a good hand in the mid-fucking-card. And his first... Now, this is a great trivia question. His first opponent... In his WWF career, the first televised opponent in his WWF career is an enhancement talent by the name of Matt Hardy. As in, that Matt Hardy.
Is this the real version one? If this is the version one of Matt Hardy.
Gosh, this is Matt Hardy NT, I think.
Yeah.
this is Matt Hardy 64.
He looks older there than he does now.
Isn't it weird?
Yeah.
Isn't nutrition a weird one?
He's got
fashion and nutrition.
He's got no tan. He's got short, slick backed hair. Mm-hmm. He's got lovely electric blue tights.
What's funny is that like these two will find each other again, I do believe, in 2001. When Steve Austin is a bad un. We're just getting in, funny enough, we are just getting into the Steve Austin heel run on the classic SmackDown review. And I believe on this week's episode, or the one we've just had, we talked about Steve Austin's running with the Hardys and how Steve Austin and Triple H are beating up the Hardys. So it's just funny how all these years on, Matt Hardy is still seen as, yeah, you're not beating Steve Austin, despite the fact your careers have gone in a multitude of different ways.
Well, I'm
not beating Steve Austin.
I'm one of those gimps who still watches Being the Elite, mainly to see if we can get anything out of it for the news site. But this week when we're recording Being the Elite, it's just the Hardy boys telling the Young Bucks. The Young Bucks have been like, oh, we lost to FTR. And Hardy's like, we lost to everyone. We lost to the Smoking Guns. We lost to the two-man power trip. And Jeff Hardy just keeps going, we lost to everyone. They're just naming every team they lost to.
So that's nice. They named up the two-man power trip.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So there you go. This is where the one-man power trip's in action.
And they go, we lost to Brock Lesnar, Paul Heyman. And Jeff Hardy goes, Paul Heyman pinned me. He booked himself to win.
That's ace.
Yeah, it's good.
Oh, and it's so apropos for this. So the Ringmaster with Ted DiBiase takes on Matt Hardy. His first in-ring action. Vince McMahon really put it over the Ringmaster on commentary. Austin does some headlock takedowns. Hardy gets a two count early on.
He does.
First pinfall attempt goes to Matt Hardy. An irate Ringmaster stops Hardy's momentum with a move yet unnamed, but looks like it was inspired by Lou Thesz's former finisher.
Oh.
Where he would press the guy.
It didn't quite look like piston right hands, but there were definitely some right hands
in there.
There
were some right hands in there. This was the first sighting of a Lou Thesz press in the WWF. Austin hangs Hardy in the shattered dreams position and unloads with punches.
Yeah.
Strange move.
Yeah, because I thought, is he just going to kick him in the dick and get DQ in his first match?
Ted loved this, though. He was at ringside going, ah!
He's great, Ted DiBiase.
What a lovely time I'm having watching you do the wrestles. Hardy gets a few flourishes. Austin shuts them down constantly. Austin finishes him off with the stun gun and the $1 million dream for the tap out. This is the best the Million Dollar Corporation has ever looked.
I thought it was really weird seeing proto Austin moves.
Mm.
So like you said, the Luthes press is in there. He does the thing where he goes to where he's got them hung over the second rope and he runs to do the leg thing, but Matt Hardy moves.
He even does the old elbow.
Well, no, he does it
like
as
a wiggly elbow.
He does it as a knee.
Because
I rewound it for, oh, is that the... Because, you know, the usual does all that and then into the elbow. He does all the setup without the middle fingers, but he hits a knee instead.
Oh, I thought it was an elbow. No, I must have half watched it.
Because I was looking at it thinking, ooh, that's an odd one. Yeah.
So there you go. Yeah, it's, yeah, proto Steve Austin moves. Like, they're there, but they're not quite there.
And
this is cool.
He pasted the shit out of Matt Hardy in this.
Oh, he did.
He lit him up with some chops.
Vince tells us that Ringmaster is going to be on America Online next week. I have looked high and low for this AOL chat, and I'm yet to find it. I am desperate to find it. Now, Steve Austin did do an AOL chat in June of 96, and I've got that. That's in the back pocket for when we need it. But he did one in January, apparently, that I'm keen to track down.
In June 96, is he a bit more liberal with his swearing?
This is Steve Austin in 96. But this is, I want to hear how Ringmaster hosted an AOL chat in 1996.
Fucking Pagemaster.
We get a big Shawn Michaels video package next. He's brilliant and brave, but he had to take stock when he was jumped by nine thugs in Syracuse. Has the number gone up again? I think it has, isn't it? Yeah. It just keeps creeping up. He came close to retirement, but decided to say, screw it, and enter the Royal Rumble instead. Cue instrumental version of Tell Me a Lie. Michael says he's been given a second chance, despite the fact that he's doing it against doctor's orders. So nobody has said, you have a second chance. They've all said, fucking retire, mate, you're paggard. And he's, I've got a second chance. No, like, if you broke your leg and were told you'd never run again, right, and your leg's in a cast, if you jumped out the hospital window and started running on your cast, that's not a second chance at running. That's you going against doctor's orders. You haven't been given a second chance, because if the doctors have said you've been lucky and you've got a clean bill of health, fill your boots, then you can go, a second chance. No, you say in the press conference, you're defying friends, family, and medical professionals' orders to get back into the wrestling game. It's not a second chance, mate.
He's just a sexy boy, isn't he?
He's just a sexy boy and a boy toy.
He's an innocent boy. He did look like a little boy, though. Did you notice it at the end?
So they had this interview bit at the end where he's talking to the camera. He's got a suit on and a shirt and a weird parting in his hair. I've written here, and you'll vibe with this. He looks like Kevin from Harry Enfield going for a job interview.
He fucking did. He looked awful. He looked fucking awful. Because he's got his hair tied back, but he's keeping it, you know, loose at the front because he's the sexy boy.
That parting.
Oh, it's awful.
Christ, it's like he's letting traffic through. It's just weird. Like 90s has a lot to answer for in terms of fashion and nutrition. And thing is, Michael's put that outfit on. And I get it's the 90s, but someone looked at that and went, yeah, that's fine. But I guess in the 90s it was. You watch Friends, early episodes of Friends, and they all like they sort of fell out of a props cupboard.
But it's also what I've heard about with Shawn Michaels.
He's a shit dresser.
He's apparently so. That when after he retired and he started wearing like gun hats and like a vest with a tie and like four hairs sticking out of the top of his head, it's like, oh yeah, because he doesn't have a stylist anymore. Oh,
my style is whatever I want it to be. So this is Vince sort of trying to dress Shawn Michaels to become a champion.
Yeah.
Because, again, like Vince is like, a champion should be well-dressed and presentable. And da, 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 da. I wouldn't have minded if he just worn like a baseball cap and an Onslow vest.
Onslow? Onslow for world champion. Sitting there in his fucking fag-stained couch, covered in empty tinnies, just like, yeah.
Onslow from Keeping Up Appearance, by the way, if you're not too sure about it. And if you do need an extra guide, John! Onslow as WWF champion. I want the winged eagle belt on him, please.
Oh, yes, please, John.
The best belt. Shawn Michaels coming back at the Rumble. He's going to outlast 29 stars again, which he did in 95, and win the whole thing. A second chance. Not a second chance, mate. You're going against doctor's orders. Right. What was the point in this? We come back and there's a match in progress.
Oh.
It's the Smoking Guns versus the Spiders. Do we know who the Spiders are?
We do.
It's Mosh and Thrasher, the Headbangers.
It is. Wearing masks and, the crowd are chanting for them.
The crowd are chanting, let's go Spiders. That bodes well for Billy and Bart as the reigning champions. We're back just in time to see the Sidewinder from the Gunners for the win. What was the point in showing us that? Jatkins has pointed at his notes and it just says thoughts, fucking nothing. It what was the point?
And then you remember, this was pre-taped.
Yeah. So I reckon, I can only assume they've got the timing completely skew if on this somehow. And they've just gone, we can't lob anything off the other matches. So let's just cut the shit out of what may have been a crap match between the Guns and the Spiders.
Yeah, to be fair.
The only thing I can think of is maybe the match was shit and it exposed the Guns as being shit. And if the crowd were chanting this, let's go Spiders all the way through.
Yeah.
That's it, isn't it? We've solved it. We've cracked it. When we come back, the crowd are chanting, let's go Spiders.
Yeah.
If the crowd were chanting for the Spiders all the way through, they still want that on the telly.
No.
They ain't got time to sweeten it. Just cut the match short.
It was,
and also it gives you that vibe of you must never turn off the WWF because you will miss something.
Well, it's strange because, yeah, it cut to it. So, underway right now, Smoking Guns. This was after we'd seen Doc Hendricks again, by the way.
Yeah.
For a second, saying, Razor, he's on the way. So it cuts to this match, and literally all you see is, you see Billy hit a Famasser to no reaction because it's not a thing yet. Let's go Spiders, tags in Bart. Bart hits a few fuckers. Gets them off for the Sidewinder to a smattering of boos, and then they get the win, and then it cuts straight away before the celebration.
Quickly get to go backstage when to nothing.
Yeah.
No, Tyler, no. We cut to the wrestling war room.
No.
More parody and satire from the WWF. They like you to know that it's parody and satire because therefore they can't be sued for defamation.
Yes.
Because it's parody and satire. And that's all.
It's fair game.
Ted, billionaire Ted says he's bought himself a network, a World Series, and a library of classic movies. They do a nice little grayscale shot as he says that, which is quite cute.
Yeah.
And he wants to know why he can't buy the WWF. The accountants around the table say it's not for sale and we need some of their superstars, to which Vince Russo says, all we've got is the disloyal, greedy has-beens from the 80s. Huckster, Scheme Gene, and Nacho Man protest this. Nacho Man in particular saying, I started in the 70s. Which was actually very funny.
Yeah.
WWF, you're a bit shit with comedy, but that made me laugh. And Gene going, like, what's the problem with trying to make a buck?
It's the way as well, like, when Bruce is in, we have their disloyal and just cuts the savage. We have their greedy, cuts the Scheme Gene. We have the has-beens and it cuts to the hooks that are doing all the poses. These are quite good, aren't they? They are good.
Yeah. Ted yucks at the thought of calling Huckster the boy toy as the voiceover says, the WWF, we are not for sale. Nick Khan enters the chat.
The people playing Ted and Huckster in particular are really good at it. I'd only ever seen bits of these out of context. The video that we put up about the backstage about it. But as they've been going on the weeks, I'm just like, I kind of like them. It helps Raw breeze along. The points, the zingers are funny. The zingers, that's what they are. This one was less subtle than the week before where they're saying, oh, we're not on steroids. This was just like, Savage is disloyal. Me and Gene's greedy. Hulk Hogan shit, basically.
No, Nacho Man
is greedy.
Scheme Gene is greedy. Huckster is a has-been.
But yeah,
we forget.
I did like at the end when Jerry Law says, oh, I wonder what'll happen when Ted Turner gets his hands on Time Warner.
Oh, little do you know. WCW's response to billionaire Ted has been a three-pronged approach from Eric Bischoff. Week one was threats of a lawsuit. To which they went, it's parody, mate. It's parody. Week two was Bischoff staunchly defending the steroid policy and saying, hey, WWF, how about your steroid policy? Yeah. And then the third week was, I'm just not going to talk about it. I'm just going to carry on.
Which is probably the best policy.
But yeah, Bischoff, who had been just shouting about how shit the WWF was, suddenly WWF started shitting him back. And he was like, all right, calm down.
Don't forget the fourth prong to make it a fork. Eric Bischoff in the ring screaming, Vince McMahon, I'm going to kick you in the head.
Kick you in the head, you fanny. Got that to look forward to. Goldust heads to the ring for a chat with Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon asks Goldust point blank if he is trying to, quote, prey on the homophobic fears of most men, mainly the machismo of Razor Ramon. Goldust then asks Vince if he has an extra microphone or is in his pants or if he's just pleased to see him.
And then it sounds like Jerry Lawler's legit laughing on commentary. He's like,
as Vince looks repulsed. Goldust has carefully selected Razor Ramon as his one. He says, I want you so bad, bad guy, more than any man or woman could ever want a human being. He tells Ramon to not forget the name of Goldust. This was good.
It was good. I like the fact as well, when Vince said that line, are you trying to prey upon the homophobic fears of most men? That just sums up exactly what WWF wanted from the character.
Mm-hmm.
It just summed it up right there. It's like, well, Goldust, he preys upon the homophobic fears of most men. And at the end, though, Jerry Lawler, Goldust is here. He may be queer. Get used to it. And it's like, oh, Jerry.
Yeah, that was an odd line.
But no, I thought this was really good. But we'll have a bit more on this at the end, especially from
more
the Observer.
On this in a bit. Undertaker vignette, a dangerous dark rage burns within him and a passion for WWF gold has been ignited. His destiny is the WWF title. Bret Hart tells him to wake up into the real world and they'll have a showdown at the Rumble. I'm looking forward to it. I think, is this the first showdown between Bret Hart and the Undertaker?
Probably in singles.
I like the whole technical wrestler who's like, let's just fucking do it properly. And Undertaker, who is this dead zombie.
Yeah.
I like, how will these two coexist? I guess we'll find out. I'm sure it'll be fine. Doc Hendricks has been waiting all day for Razor Ramon. Razor Ramon pushes past him. And as Doc says, oh, Goldust is here. He just did a short with Vince, and then Ramon walks off. Great job, Doc. Glad you stood there all show.
All that build up. We cut to Doc about four times throughout the show until we got to this, to have Razor Ramon and Leather Jacket go, fuck off, Doc.
Basically, yeah.
Dickhead.
Well done, Doc. You got the big interview. Come to our big main event. Isaac Yankem, DDS, is facing The Undertaker.
It'll be a classic match, brother versus brother.
I will never put my hands on my brother.
Except when he's dressed as a dentist. Then it's cute.
This is the first Undertaker Kane match on television.
Yeah.
I believe they had a run-in in Smoky Mountain when he was the Unabomber.
Yes, I think that was the first. This was from what I saw on Cage Match. Thank you again, Cage Match.
Thank you, Cage Match.
Yeah, they'd been doing bits on the house shows. They'd had, I think, running in, you say Smoky Mountain, wasn't it? Yeah.
I think it was.
Was he Unabomber or was he the Christmas Creature?
Oh, sadly, he was the Unabomber and not the Christmas Creature.
They tangled at the Survivor Series, but this is the first singles WWF match between them.
Yankem, according to Vince, is in more trouble than Hillary Clinton. So this is the Whitewater controversy that is rumbling on this week in America.
I don't know this.
So a New York Times report during the presidential campaign reported this. Basically, it's to do with legal costs from Hillary Clinton, the boring version of it. I'm very, very quickly summing it up. On January the 26th, 1996, Clinton became the first spouse of a U.S. president to be subpoenaed to testify for a federal grand jury. After several independent counsels had investigated, a final report was issued in 2000 that stated there were insufficient evidence that either Clinton had engaged in criminal wrongdoing. So there was a bit of a money system, money thing going on.
Okay.
Kept it very, very vague. I know it's not a history of news podcast. Very sad. I could tell you all the N64 games that came out this week, but I couldn't tell you about Whitewater. Find out in your own time. There's plenty of podcasts about it. Undertaker and Yankem have an Undertaker and Kane match. Undertaker says he's grabbing Yankem by... Oh, no, Vince McMahon says he's grabbing Yankem by the mandible, which gave Mick Foley an idea for months to come.
Mason.
Yankum had a good go, but Undertaker sat up, went for a tombstone. Yankum escapes to the outside. The fight continues on the floor with Undertaker choking Yankum by the ring post and nearly getting counted out. McMahon says the Undertaker has been more ruthless since wearing the mask, which is a nice little storyline addition. Like that. Like the fact that the mask maybe makes him a little bit more wild.
Well, I'd noticed in this as well, this, because I was looking at him and thinking, I can't remember before the mask what Undertaker's attire was. Mm. But this was starting to look more like as I like to call him, King of the Ring Undertaker. Yeah. He's just got the plain sleeveless shirt. He's got the pants. I think he's got the grey gloves, long black hair, no mullet, nothing. And then the mask. Mm. And he does look, yeah, he looks cool.
Taker nearly breaks Isaac's arm on the turnbuckle as Jerry Lawler attempts to steal the chains that represent the urn from Paul Bearer. Taker sees his shenanigans, King legs it, and all this silliness gives Yankum time to get back into the fight during the break. Yankum tries to make Taker submit into a crap-looking single crab as the crowd chant, "Rest in peace." Yankum went, "I know what I'll do. This'll work. Single crab.
Got him in the palms of our hands, brother.
We've got him, brother. A man who's never submitted. We get a picture-in-picture of Doc fucking Hendricks. Goldust will talk about his match next week with Bret Hart after this match. Of course he will. So next week, Goldust is facing Bret Hart post-Rumble. Vince says Goldust does not represent the gay community. His sexual preference is not an issue here, but he has been harassing Razor Ramon regardless. Vince has been well-prepped.
Well, this is coming from, I'd said in... on last week's show that Meltzer had mentioned that WF were maybe trying to give themselves an out on the character because people have been complaining. Yeah. Goldust have been like rubbing themselves at shows. So this is them basically saying, "Oh no, the whole thing could be an act just for this story." Basically,
yeah, that's it. So they by saying that they kind of distance themselves from what many may consider a homophobic storyline. Mm. Which probably isn't a bad thing to do. You know, it's 96. The world is very slowly changing in that regard. So Vince is very, very aware of it from what's been told. I imagine, as I say, I think he's been prepped on. That line felt very, like, read this verbatim.
Yeah.
Like, don't tart it up. Read it verbatim. Covers our back. Yankum goes for a tombstone. Taker counters out of it. We didn't say what because we had to fucking cut to Doc Hendricks again. Heaven forbid we miss Doc Hendricks scratching his ass backstage because we cut to Hendricks and we miss how Undertaker got out of the tombstone.
I think this was a fuck up.
Do you think it was a fuck up?
Yeah.
I never thought of that.
Because the spot usually is because... Yankum goes for the tombstone and Undertaker goes to flip over into his own tombstone. It suddenly cuts to Doc Hendricks going, oh, and then back. And it's like, oh, Undertaker slammed him down. So I think he went for flip over into his own tombstone, lost his foot and dropped him.
Probably a better idea.
But even then, there could have been a better way of editing this because it was taped a month ago. This was taped in December. So, but yeah, I think this is a fuck up.
Right, okay. We don't see it, as we say, but Taker then lands a tombstone for the three. Immediately, Vince says, wait a minute, don't go anywhere because Doc Hendricks has gold dust. This is very in keeping of the nature of wrestling on a Monday night at the moment, where it is a case of everybody's flicking the channels now.
Yeah.
So Vince is desperate to keep them there. Like, don't go anywhere because there's more story. Please! Goldust is talking about his match with Bret Hart next week with Doc Hendricks. And I don't know why this made me laugh, because it's just like one camera and he's there going, oh, Bret Hart, well, I'm looking at you. Da, 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 da. And then Razor Ramon just sort of like shuffles quite with on a mission into the shot, yeah. And just pops Goldust. just flat out just goes bop. Like Goldust surely Goldust would have seen him coming.
He just goes, hey, freak, and smacks him in the end. Goldust like, oh, fucking hell.
Goldust, so he proper batters him here, calling him a freak, smashing him with a bin.
He smashes him with a bin.
He really does. Like, Razor, mate, he's doing a character. Calm down. Razor did not like this storyline, and you could tell by the sheer anger in this story. Goldust gave Razor a low blow as we cut to break.
But I like the fact, though, that he... This is the most realistic selling of a low blow I've ever seen. Because all the referees were going, the referees were trying to break it up, going, hits him in the balls, and goes, ooh. And raises on the floor, going, oh.
He really sells the low blow, doesn't he?
Oh, shit, that's really good.
Back from the break and Sonny's in the bath, probably a sweaty game of snooker, saying, we did it for almost an hour, which is utterly unrealistic. Who does it for an hour?
90 seconds have passed.
All right, Mr. Olympia. Backstage again. Reyes is being calmed down by the officials. Presumably they're checking his bollocks, but not touching them. Mm. Goldust tries to leave, putting his coat on like he's rushing out of a nightclub. Mm. And Reyes just jumps him again. Goldust gets bounced into a fuse box. Nearly 6 years before Tourette's dust appears.
Oh, shit. Speaking of, did you hear what Doc Hendricks said?
Yeah!
He goes, oh, shit. Holy shit. He proper fucking battered him. It was amazing.
They fight outside in the snow. Remember, there was a blizzard. Yeah. One of the biggest blizzards in the history of the northeast of America hit last week, which is why Raw was a bit fraught last week. And there was still the remnants from it. Ramon is twatting Goldust with a shovel. Goldust manages to recover. He bounces Ramon's head off a truck, tries to escape and slips on the black ice. This shouldn't have been as funny as it was, but I had a lovely time watching a very angry Scott Hall fuck up Dustin Runnels for being a bit weird and then like them falling over themselves in trying.
All the officials like, oh, look, oh, shit.
Goldust gets into his car and drives off, and Ramon throws a bin at the car as it goes. I loved this. It was wild.
This was amazing. This is so good. They've built up, seemingly, because it was simmering. It's like, oh, Goldust's a bit weird. Oh, he keeps biting at Razor Ramon. Oh, he's rubbing his tit. And it seems like in the case of, in like a week, they've gone, right, dial it up to 11. Next week as well, Goldust versus Bret Hart. They've gone fuck yeah.
Mm.
Even though they've been saying they've kind of given themselves an out, and they're saying this isn't a homophobic storyline or character. They're saying though, but people are talking and people are angry at it.
Yeah,
fuck it, we're going with Goldust. I really like this. This is the match I'm most invested in on the Rumble, more than they've done fuck all with Bret versus Taker really. But the build up for this was really good. Do you want a little bit from The Observer?
I would love a bit from The Observer.
So Dave is doing a piece building up to the Rumble saying there's likely going to be some title changes. And he's put, given the build-up, Goldust is probably going to win the Intercontinental title, with probably the main obstacle in his path not being how disappointing the gimmick has gotten over, but the opposition to both the gimmick and to him getting the title from the Click, because the Click wanted Hunter Hearst Helmsley to be the one to take the title from Razor. And obviously, like you're saying there, Razor's just like, fuck off. I'm not having this. So he's punching Goldust. He's saying, this is shit. The Clicker backstage saying, oh, we want the Hunter Hearst Helmsley to win the title. Fuck off. Oh. And Goldust just like, I'm Dusty's boy and I'll punch you. So
they should have called the Click's bluff and gone, okay, Helmsley can win, but he has to do the Goldust gimmick.
Yeah.
Oh no, don't like it no more. Yeah, there was a lot of opposition to all of this, wasn't there? Also on the brawl, despite everyone claiming Jim Cornette had nothing to do with the booking, his DNA was all over the Ramon Goldust angle, says Dave Meltzer.
Yeah.
Complete with him brawling out of the building and the heel getting his car and driving off. The brawl was much stiffer than you'd expect from the WWF or anyone else for that matter.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more, Dave.
This was, yeah, was, I mean,
very funny, but very aggressive.
And I think as well with Vince saying, you know, he doesn't represent the gay community. He doesn't represent any community is what he said. And I was like, this is the tip of the iceberg for the beginning of 96 for how opposition to Goldust is going to look homophobic. Because, again, WrestleMania's on the horizon.
Fucking wait. Thoughts on Raw this week?
Good episode.
This was great fun.
Yeah, good go home. Like we were saying about the billionaire Ted, it's helping break up the shows. 45 minutes, they use the 45 minutes well. Action, then a backstage bit with Todd or fucking Doc 100 times. Bit more wrestling. Sonny looking fit in a bath, saying, oh, we did it for an hour. Get some pseudogram, you'll be all right. They're leaning into it.
this episode, you've got Goldust basically saying, yeah, fuck, I'm playing mind games, and then getting battered. You've got Sonny saying, oh, we're after an hour. You've got, you know, parental discretion is advised. Mm. It's this, yeah, really good.
A wrestling banger between Jannetty and Owen.
Yeah, oh, God, yeah. Really good opener.
That was a nice time. Next week is the Royal Rumble, the 1996 edition of the Royal Rumble. And Jackins and I will be offering an alternative commentary to the Royal Rumble pay-per-view. You'll be able to listen to it on this very podcast feed. I'd love it if you could join us for that. Anything you're working on?
That big boy, that's hurting me. That sounded completely weird out of context.
Yeah, that sounds quite worrying. The secret big boy that you're working on.
Big list, but it's those early stages where I'm just like, oh, fucking hell. The enormity of the project is ahead of me. And it's one of those where when I get to the absolute meat of it, it's going to be a really good list, but these early entries, there's some dross I've got to get through. So
nice.
At the moment, it's just like, oh, fucking hell. Yourself, anything apart from?
A brand new Desert Island Graps will be on your podcast feed on Wednesday, featuring Venice Gabrielle. Now, the name may not ring a bell, but there is a series on Netflix currently called Midnight Asia. And it's all about what goes on in different parts of Asia, you know, in the late hours, like in some of like the nightlife and stuff of Asia. And this particular episode about the Philippines caught my eye because we got to see Venice in action as Crystal, who is one of very few female wrestlers on the wrestling scene in Manila.
Okay.
And I was fascinated by this. So I reached out to Venice and said, do you fancy coming on and talking about the wrestling scene in the Philippines? She's like, yeah, let's do it. So by the time you are watching this, the episode is recorded and you'll hear it on Wednesday.
Fucking
I. Really love it. I'm very blessed with Desert Island Graps. We mix it up. We've had guys from WWE, guys from AEW, Impact Wrestling guys, New Japan. And I like the fact that we can shine a light on different, on independent wrestlers as well.
Yeah.
And wrestlers from off the beaten track and also wrestling from different cultures and different cities and countries and parts of the world. And I'm really excited for you to find out a little bit more about Venice, aka Crystal, and the wrestling scene in the Philippines.
Oh, very nice.
Really cool. Really excited for that one. And that'll be on the podcast feed on Wednesday. And if you're a Patreon, you can watch it as well. You lucky thing. And until we are back together to talk more bollocks like this, he is at Brad Atkins on Twitter. I'm at Tom Campbell on Twitter. We're at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us. Ahmed Johnson's not been on this week. Give us an Ahmed Johnson. Love you. Bye. Scene.
I noticed with the new intro that you slipped a little Ahmed in there.
How did you like that?
Did it? I was like, oh, you little bastard.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.